chapter 9, text 22. Earlier in this chapter, Krishna has explained the inconceivable potency and how different people, different individuals, or worshippers worship him ultimately, although they may not actually know that they are worshipping Krishna. Then Krishna here, in text 22, very important verse, Ananyas Chintyantu Mam Ye Jana Paripasate Esham Nitya Vyuktanam Yogi Chemam Pahamiru. So, one who has no other object, Ananya, his bhakti is Ananya. Ananya means it is fixed on him only, with no other desire. This is actually bhakti. We don't have bhakti to the demigods, we don't have bhakti to our country. There's a popular name in India, at least I know one person by the name of Deshbhakta. So he was probably born around Indian independence time or something, and his parents were full of great nationalistic feelings and named him the devotee of his country, Deshbhakta. But actually bhakti is not meant for anyone but Krishna. And it is meant to be, for it to be pure, for kevala bhakti, ananya bhakti, means that it is focused simply on Krishna. So ananya means having no other object except Krishna, chintyanto, mam. So without any, because you can concentrate on Krishna, but for a short time. So that's chintyanto mam, but ananya chintyanto mam means you are concentrating on Krishna continuously because your meditation has no other object, only Krishna. So this type of pure devotional service is being described. Ye jana, and those people, pariupasate, who properly worship in this way, tesham nitya abhiyuktanam, they are fixed in devotion in this way, and then yoga chemam baham yaham. Yoga chemam baham yaham means that this, they are fixed in this yoga, and I protect them, and I carry them, practically speaking. Aham, Krishna says, I personally do this. This is Krishna, Krishna's relationship with his pure devotees. Yoga chemam vaham yaham, that he carries them. And Prabhupada translates this verse very sweetly, but those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating upon my transcendental form, to them, I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Prabhupada explains in his purport. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day. Being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies which make the devotee perfect in self-realization so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes we think that it is improper for us to desire to be with Krishna, but that is not correct. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Janmani Janmani Shure Bhavatad Bhakti Vaituki Toye, he's showing that the devotee, even birth after birth, is wishing to always remember Krishna, always serve Krishna. But that doesn't mean that the devotees like ourselves think that I don't want to be with Krishna, I want to stay in this world birth after birth for preaching, or something like that. That is a misunderstanding of the philosophy. Because when we desire to stay in the world birth after birth, it is not to serve Krishna, it's because we have material attachments actually. We should desire to be with Krishna. One time in Japan, Prabhupada was saying that we should desire, in one of his lectures, he was saying we should desire to go back home, back to Godhead, to Goloka Vrindavan. So I said to Prabhupada, in very, like a second grade child, a 6-7 year old child who thinks he's very wonderful and knows everything. So I said to Prabhupada, we just want to stay here and serve you. And Prabhupada looked and said, don't make me stay here to accept your service. It's actually natural for a devotee that he wants to be with Krishna. Because this material world is a horrible place. It is a horrible place. It is the most horrible place. It is the most frustrating place. And the more we try to arrange our life to get happiness here, the more miserable we become. And even the happiness we do get, we're fearful all the time, because at any moment it can be taken and something disturbs it. So that very happiness becomes a source of distress. It is a horrible place. And the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say it is not a fit place for a gentleman. So we should cultivate this desire to go back home, back to Godhead. We should, it is good. But we should not do that in a selfish way. I want to go back home, back to Godhead, because there's a couple of briksha trees, and if I want a motorcycle, I can get a motorcycle. If I can get whatever I want, there's good prasadam there, not like in some places, or whatever. So that is not the mood for going back is I want to serve Krishna. And how can I live without Krishna's association? That is exalted Krishna consciousness. So actually the stage of Ayi Nanda Tiruja Kinkaram, praying, O Lord, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or another I have fallen into this ocean of birth and death. Please therefore fix me up as an atom of your lotus feet. And which is the one that's the beginning? The end is Janmani Janmani Shpure. What is the beginning? Nadjanam Nadjanam Nasundarim. That I don't want wealth, Janam followers, Sundarim, different translations, either beautiful women or have the prestige of people worshipping me because I write such wonderful verses. Pavitam va jagadisha kamani mama janamani jam. So the devotee, when he's actually fixed in Krishna consciousness, at the moment of death, where does he hope to take his next birth? He's just praying for service and a situation where he can remember Krishna, and then he allows Krishna to move him where he likes for his own welfare. But he does not want material things. He does not want at all. This is a very pure platform. Very pure platform. So, Krishna here explains that if we just worship him exclusively and focus our consciousness on him, how does Krishna react to that? Is the devotee going to be left alone? Because we tend to think, if I just devote all my energy to serving Krishna, who'll take care of me? So here Krishna says, who will take care of us? Tesham nitya vayuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. There are many stories in this regard. The famous one, one Vaishnava named Arjuna Turja, who lived many, many years ago. But when he saw Krishna in this verse, he was a very pure devotee, very exalted Vaishnava. When he saw this verse, where Krishna says, Yoga Chemam Vaham Jaham, and Vaham means that I personally carry to that devotee, if he worships me with Ananya Bhakti. I personally carry him. Vaham Jaham means I carry him. So this Arjuna Charja became was such a wonderful devotee. He said, why should Krishna personally carry? He's the Supreme Lord. Why should he personally do this? So instead of, he actually changed the Bhagavad Gita. He scratched it out. And where it said Vaham Yaham, he wrote Karam Yaham. I have it done. When someone is devoted to me in this way, I have his necessities carried for him and provide everything for him. So after scratching it out, he left. And he was so poor. He and his wife were so poor. How many of you know this story, right? Everyone knows it already. I'll tell it anyway. It's always fun. He was so poor that they had no food in the house. He and his wife. And every day, he was so dependent on Krishna, and he was in that mood, that he would go and beg, and whatever he would beg, and succeed in begging, his wife would cook that, and they would eat that on that day. So, this is really depending on Krishna. It's glorious. So, after some time, while Arjuna Chaudhary was out, his wife was in the house, and on the door, and then very insistent. So she goes to the door, and she sees, in the way I heard Prabhupada tell the story, is that she saw two boys. Actually, he said two boys, and they were carrying. There was two. He said the name of it. Actually, I can't remember what it was, but there was a long stick, and they put the stick on the shoulder, and each end. There's a basket. So she looked at this boy. Why are you banging so on the door? Oh, here, you please take this food. Took the basket off his shoulder, the stick off his shoulder, and took the basket. Said, here, immediately, please, you take this. We have to go immediately. She said, dear son, you are so beautiful. You are so wonderful with your chocolate complexion and curly hair. Why are you in so much anxiety? Why do you want to leave? Come in, sit down for a few moments. It's in the midday, the sun is all out. No, no, I don't want to sit down. I cannot come inside. Why? I'm afraid. Why are you afraid? Why are you giving me this food? Your husband, he has sent me here. And I'm afraid he's going to come back and beat me again. What, my husband? Brahmin scholar? So peaceful, so pure. He's beaten you. Yes, you look. So he showed him his back. And on the back there were beating marks. I must go immediately. Please take this. Everything is there. I'm going. Wife is amazed. She opened up all day. I didn't have any food for that day, and there was so much rice, so many vegetables, wheat flour, everything. So she started cooking, thinking, who is this boy, my husband, what has he done? So she was thinking and thinking, and when she finished cooking, she offered the food, and then she began to eat, which is completely against the Vedic culture. Because in the Vedic culture, not the Western culture, the wife will always serve her husband first. And then after he has taken, she takes. So she began to eat. And suddenly Arjuna Charja Prabhu comes, opens the door and sees his wife eating. She says, you're eating? How is this you're eating? And she immediately jumped up and said, Acharya, you have become so cruel. That's how Prabhupada said, Acharya, you have become so cruel. Beating this boy? How is this? He said, what? Yes, he has come and all this food, and he saw all the food there. He has come with all this food, and then he ran away, and he showed me the beating marks. on his back, and he said, you didn't force him, and he wouldn't even stay? He began to think and think and think. And then he realized what happened. He said, what did this boy look like? Oh, he was very, very beautiful, with honest eyes, and dark curling hair, and darkish complexion, yellow dhoti like lightning. So then he understood that he had forced Krishna personally to come. And when he had scratched out Vahamyaham, that I will bring it, and made it Karamyaham, I will have it done, Krishna showed those scratch marks as beating marks right on his own back. So how wonderful. This is the nature of bhakti. And that is why bhakti, especially on the level of bhava bhakti, is so rare, because it places Krishna. What is the term? We explained it yesterday, which says that bhava bhakti is so rare that Rupa Goswami said? Who remembers? You said it yesterday. Sudurlava. It is so rare because it is awarded by Krishna. And Krishna is he is careful who he awards this to, because he becomes under the control of that devotee. So he's careful. So this verse shows how Krishna personally takes care of his pure devotees. So one of the acharyas put in this conversation between Krishna and a devotee. They say, you carry upon your head the needs of your devotees? What kind of devotee allows you to do this? Makes you serve him? And Krishna's answer is, they have not given me this burden. I do it by my own sweet will. It is not a burden. I can create universes. This is not a burden for me. For I have a feeling of personal desire, so therefore there is no burden.
Where are we?
Where are we?
Yeah.
Vrindavan? Yeah. You are just in the right place. Don't worry. So this is how Krishna deals with his devotees. Next verse. But, now see, there are contrasts going on, and then it will finally lead to, from 26 onward, Krishna will begin to explain this in detail, how he deals with his devotees. So, but those who are devotees of other gods, and who worship them with faith, actually only worship me, O son of Kunti. But they do so avidipurvaka, without proper intelligence, in the wrong way. Because it is Krishna who is empowering the demigods to satisfy the needs of the worshippers of the demigods. Krishna gives the demigod the potency to reward those who worship the demigods with their own desired results. And if Krishna did not give the demigods that power, the demigods would have no potency to do so. So those who worship the demigods, instead of worshipping Krishna, they're actually still worshipping Krishna, but they are doing it in the wrong way. Avidipurvaka. Next verse. I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Bhoktaram Jagatabhasam. Krishna said the same thing at the end of chapter 5. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth amongst the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. So those who worship the demigods are in the mode of goodness. Those who worship the ancestors are in the mode of passion. And those who worship the ghosts and spirits in the mode of ignorance will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me, or Vishuddhasattva, pure devotional service, they will live with me. So when one worships the demigods, one gets some result, but that result is flickering. And ultimately, those results are given only by Krishna. Ultimately. And if one makes some mistake in his sacrifice, then he doesn't get the actual result. What to speak of, he does get it, but yet it is still temporary. Because he goes to the planets, ultimately he may go to the planet of the demigods, but then, after taking birth amongst the demigods, he will come down again. This has been explained earlier. What to speak of the miserable results that come from worshipping ghosts and spirits and the forefathers, the Pitris. So therefore the conclusion is that if one wants an eternal result, where one won't have to come down again, one should leave the material world and worship Krishna. This is the result. Now what happens? How does Krishna expect his devotees to worship him? Because if one is worshipping the demigods, there are great, elaborate sacrifices that have to be performed. And again, if the priest pronounces the words wrong, everything is ruined, and one may get the opposite result. And it's very, very, very difficult. Very difficult. And after performing such difficult sacrifices, the result is temporary. So therefore we should worship Krishna. So how do we worship Krishna? Krishna explains this in the 26th verse, very famous verse. And this begins what I call Krishna's contract. This is Krishna's plea to the devotees or the readers of the Bhagavad Gita that they should worship him. And this is the end of the 9th chapter, which is right in the middle of the Bhagavad Gita, the most confidential understanding or the most confidential information within the Bhagavad Gita. Hatram pushpam param toyam yome bhaktya prayatati taraham bhakti paritam asnami paritakma. That if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, patram, that's singular, not patrani, one leaf, not an elaborate sacrifice costing thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of rupees or dollars or whatever. If one offers one leaf, one flower, one fruit, some water, but with bhakti, Krishna says, I will accept. The demigods, they are pleased by what you offer. But Krishna is pleased by the devotion in which the offering is made. Krishna has everything. Already, he is the bhokta. He is the enjoyer. He is loka maheshwara. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sava loka maheshwara. He doesn't need anything from anyone. He doesn't need to be glorified. He's already most glorious. But it is in our benefit to glorify Krishna. It is in our benefit to give something to Krishna. And Krishna doesn't need it. But when we offer something with devotion, then Krishna asnami, I will accept it, I will take it. Krishna's appetite increases with the devotion of the devotee. There are two little stories about devotees offering. One is in the forest. There was one Sabara, devotee of Lord Ram, And when Lord Ram appeared near her house, there were some Badri trees, bear trees as they're called locally. They're all in fruit right now. So she wanted to offer these to Lord Ram. But sometimes, if you're experienced in bear fruits, they sometimes taste sweet, sometimes they taste sour. So she would take a bite out of it to make sure it was a sweet one, and then give it to Ram. And test another one, bite, and to Ram. Ram was accepting it. Obviously we shouldn't imitate. Or the other story is, before Krishna came to his house, and he was very, very hungry. And when his wife saw Krishna, she was in so much ecstatic love that Krishna has commanded. Krishna, you're a devotee of Krishna. And Krishna comes to your house. This is the perfection of everything. You want to cook him unlimited preparations and serve him so nicely and please him. But Krishna was so hungry, he wanted something to eat right now. So all that was there were bananas. And Vidura's wife, in her ecstasy, was peeling the bananas and offering Krishna the peels and throwing away the bananas. And Krishna was taking the banana peels and eating them. Because he was offering them with ecstatic love. And he could digest anything, obviously. Because it says, we'll see in the 11th chapter, he's digesting the universe, practically speaking, in his kalaroop. His universal form, all the soldiers are entering into his mouth. So what is the difficulty of digesting banana peels? There is no problem for Krishna. But they tasted very good to him. Why? Because they were offered with devotion. So this is the key ingredient. Prabhupada's purport is so wonderful. Here, I'll just read a little of it. No one can be barred from Krishna consciousness because it is so easy and universal. Who is such a fool that he doesn't want to be Krishna conscious by this simple method and thus attain the highest perfection of life of eternity, bliss and knowledge? Krishna wants only loving service and nothing more. Krishna accepts even a little flower from his pure devotee. He does not want any kind of offering from a non-devotee. He is not in need of anything from anyone because he is self-sufficient. And yet, he accepts the offering of his devotee in an exchange of love and affection. To develop Krishna consciousness is the highest perfection of life. Bhakti is mentioned twice in this verse in order to declare more emphatically that bhakti or devotional service is the only means to approach Krishna. No other condition, such as becoming a Brahmin, a learned scholar, a very rich man, or a great philosopher, can induce Krishna to accept such offering. Without the basic principle of bhakti, nothing can induce the Lord to agree to accept anything from anyone. Bhakti is never causal. It's Krishna. It is independent. And this bhakti is so powerful that it gives Krishna an appetite. So, the acharyas have made some interesting comments on this verse. One is that bhakti parita, Prabhupada translates it here as offered in devotion, but it also means it is brought with devotion. So if one doesn't have devotion all day long, and then goes on the altar with some food cooked, and then offers it to Krishna with great devotion at that time, Krishna will not accept it. What should happen is, ideally, and this is why our farm communities are so wonderful, because we can live an ideal life in which the food is planted, the seeds are planted with devotion, and then the plants grow with devotion, and then the fruit or vegetables are picked with devotion. Then they are carried to the kitchen with devotion, knowing all the time that this is for Krishna, for his pleasure. Then they are cooked with devotion, and then brought the plate assembled with devotion. Very nicely, not too much on the plate. Prabhupada once said, because the devotees would tend to give him a plate of prasadam that was piled this high. Why? Why? Mahaprasadam! Yes. So Prabhupada said, when there's so much on my plate, I lose my appetite. Oh, very good! That means we'll even have more Mahaprasadam! That is not possible. So everything placed tastefully, the prasadam aromatic and beautiful, the colors, not all the same color even, everything. No, everything very nicely done, all fresh, the best ingredients, and then all Krishna. Your devotees have made this for you, please accept it. One time, in the early days of the movement, the devotees, they started understanding that there were so many elaborate rituals. At first when Prabhupada said that if I told you all the rules and regulations of deity worship, you would faint. But then, gradually, he introduced the proper standard. And then when the devotees understood that there were different mantras and mudras and different ways to offer the food, very complicated things, some of the devotees asked Prabhupada for the proper mantras to put the deity to rest. Prabhupada wrote back and said, in English, my dear Krishna, it is now time for you to take rest. Please take rest. And I'm sure those devotees who wanted some elaborate rituals were very disappointed. There is a Sanskrit mantra, and you're supposed to go like this. And why Prabhupada is giving us a lower standard or something, but actually that standard is the highest standard. With a heartfelt request to Krishna, oh Krishna, you must be tired now, you come and take rest. This is actually the highest standard. We don't neglect all the rules and regulations, but the simple expression of bhakti induces Krishna to take rest. The simple expression of bhakti, affection for Krishna, putting Krishna's pleasure in the center of our life, induces Krishna's appetite to increase and increase and increase. So there are so many wonderful stories like this. So, as Prabhupada explained, bhakti is mentioned twice in this verse, bhakti paritam and bhakti prayachati. When offers with devotion, then Krishna accepts this. Nami, I take this with great relish. So this this is pure devotional service. Now that's standard. When we hear about it or speak about it, it is so pleasing to the heart, and we tend to think, yes, I will be like this. But it is not easy just to become that standard of a pure devotee, because one has to be completely surrendered to Krishna's pleasure. One has to surrender completely that, yes, Krishna, I'm acting for your pleasure, and whatever you want, I am doing. And then the act comes after the surrender. So, because that is actually a very high standard, Krishna gives another alternative. And we've spoken about this many times in this class, and we'll speak about it one more time, or maybe even two more times. A different standard, where the surrender comes after one works. It is not as high. This is Nishkam Karma Yoga. Yat kurosi rashnasi, yat johosi tadasya, tat yat tapasyasi kamteya, tat kurusva manavaram. Whatever you do, whatever you do, whatever you're already doing, whatever you eat,
Whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. What you like to do, you do it for me, and do it as an offering to me, your work. So this, and the, therefore, if your work is offered to me, the fruit is offered to me. That is Nishkam Karma Yoga. Lower than that is Sakam Karma Yoga, where you do what you want and keep the fruit and give Krishna something. This is much, much higher. And this leads to great transcendental knowledge, bhakti. It will lead to bhakti. So this is a karma diva digarate mahavishya. So what you like to do, you do for me. So devotees who, sometimes the devotees, they're preaching to life members, etc. And the basic preaching of them to life members and congregational members is what? What level should they preach on, basically, generally? Karma Kanda, Sakam Karma Yoga, Nishkam Karma Yoga, or Pure Bhakti. What is the basic preaching level?
Sakam Karma Yoga.
Yes.
Any other ideas? Their level.
Huh?
Depends on their level.
What is generally their level?
Sakam.
Hopefully. It's coming up to the Sakam platform. We're having Gita Jayanti, distribute Gitas, you donate some of your heart and wealth like that. So if you're preaching to people to be on the Sakam level, what level should you be on? At least the Nishkam level. Otherwise, if you're also attached to the fruits of your work, then then you get them up to the level of Nishkam, and you're still Sakam because they're surrendering. So it behooves the preacher to be advanced at least to the Nishkam platform. So if one works in the way that's suggested here, yat karosi rashnasi, yat juhosi rasya, even if this is Krishna's mercy, yes, if we can offer Krishna just a tulsi leaf with some water, with devotion, he's fully satisfied. And he completely protects and takes care of the devotee. But even if we're not on that level, if we just do what we like to do for Krishna in a detached fashion, that will, here is the result of that in the next verse, in 28. In this way, you will be free from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me, and that's the essence of performing this Nishkam Karma Yoga. Simply detachment is not sufficient. But one should be thinking, I am doing this for Krishna. I am doing this work for Krishna's pleasure. And that focusing of the consciousness on Krishna is so purifying and powerful. So with your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. And the word uses vimukta, not just mukta or mukti, but vimukta, very special mukti, special liberation. And that special liberation is what? This bhakti. So this Nishkam Karma will bring us to the bhakti level because we should fix our mind on Krishna. And we'll hear about this this principle. We've heard about it in the 8th chapter, Mam Anusmara Yugyacha. Yes, Tasmat Saveshu Kaleshu, in all times and circumstances you should fight, Arjuna, but you should fix your mind and remembrance of me. And then later in the 18th chapter, Chaitasya Savakamani, Maya Sanyasi Matpara, Buddhi Yoga Mupashita Matita, Satatam Bhava. You should fix your mind on me in all circumstances. Never forget me. So you'll get, one will get bhakti if one does that. So is this fact that if that Krishna cares so much for his devotees, is this Krishna's partiality? Because this is also described in the seventh canto, the first chapter of the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, where Yudhisthira was surprised to hear how Krishna killed Sisupal. Well, Narada Muni was explaining this and was asked, is this Krishna's partiality? He doesn't like the demons and he likes the devotees, so it seems childish, because if he's the father of everyone, therefore he should be equal to everyone. So is Krishna partial? That he's taking so much care of his devotees? So there's a few ways to understand this. So Krishna explains his partiality and his impartiality. He says, Samoham. What does Samoham mean? I am equal. Sava Bhuteshu. What does that mean? To all Sava Bhuteshu. To all living entities I am equal. Name Dvesho. Dvesha means envy or enmity, envy. Name dvesha, to no one do I feel envy, stina priya. Priya means very, very dear, nor special affection. So Krishna is saying here clearly, I'm equal to everyone. No one is especially dear to me, and no one is, nor am I inimical to everyone, to anyone. Ye bhajanti. Two means but. So when the word but is used, that means that there's a change of subject. But ye bhajanti, those who are doing bhajan unto me, who are serving me, mam bhaktya, in devotion, who are doing devotional service unto me and serving me in devotion, Mayatiteshu Chapyaham, that they are in me, they exist in Krishna, and Teshu Chapyaham, and I am in them. They are in me, and I am in them. So that means Krishna is external to them, and Krishna is internal for them. He's everywhere for them. If someone worships Krishna with devotion. So this explains Krishna's partiality or impartiality. So if one is not a devotee, Krishna is equal to them. We've spoken about this before. As the Super Soul is Lord Paramatma, Samoham Savabhuteshu. That however you act, you will get a suitable result, an exact result, depending upon how you act. Nothing to do with favoritism, nothing to do with envy. Just you get according to what you deserve, according to how you act. But just wait one moment, okay? Just I'll finish this first, and then we'll, because then it starts increasing Krishna's special dealings with his devotees. But if you're a devotee, ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya, and this is no longer the super soul, how the super soul deals with someone, this is how Bhagawan deals with someone who's a devotee. Bhagawan only deals with his devotees. The super soul deals with every living entity. Bhagawan only deals with his devotees. And this is how Bhagawan deals, and it's different from the super soul. Yeh bhajanti tu mam bhaktya, but for my devotees who worship me with devotion, I am especially in them and I'm outside of them. That means that everything the devotee does is Krishna's mercy. Or everything that happens to the devotee is Krishna's mercy. And the devotee is prompted by Krishna within. He's taking special care of by Krishna. He's always thinking of Krishna within. And in this way, the devotee is always cared for. Krishna is explaining how we should live in this world. Do we want the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the devotee who is Bhakta Vatsal? There's a wonderful verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye Swarupa Purnata Bhakti Vatsaya Atma Parjanta Vidanyata. That Krishna has so many qualities. Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye. He has so much opulence. He has so much sweetness. He has so much mercy. This is incomplete. His nature is like that. But his special characteristic, which is most glorious, is that he is bhakta-vatsala. That he leans towards his devotees and takes special care of his devotees. And he actually even becomes conquered by his devotees. And he cannot even repay his devotees' affection for him. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Krishnadas Kaviraj, Goswami Maharaj explains that Krishna is saying, Bharat Muni, the great analyzer of Natakshastra, of drama, the scriptures that deal with drama, when talking about this Shastra, they talk who enjoys more, the lover or the beloved. So Bharat Muni's conclusion is that both the lover and the beloved enjoy equally. So Krishna explains that Bharat Muni, or he who says that the lover and beloved enjoy equally, do not know what the residents of Vrindavan taste. They enjoy so much more than me. Why? Because their pleasure is Krishna's happiness. And Krishna is unlimitedly happy. So therefore, they are unlimitedly more happy. They get more, because they get pleasure out of seeing Krishna happy. That is their pleasure. They are the highest, the greedy bhaktis. So their pleasure, just like you see this, whenever Vajrabihari Prabhu and Mother Ananda's little boy Gopinath were walking everywhere. Everyone is always giving him food. Always giving him some sweet or something like that. And why do all the old people give the little boys sweets like that? Because they get very much pleasure from it, watching him eat. Especially in India, wherever you go, little children are always getting sweets from everyone and everything. And the adults get more pleasure than the children, just watching them eat and smiling and happiness like that. It is natural. It is natural. So the devotees, because of their bhakti, Krishna takes such special care of them, and the devotees don't want this, as we heard already, Yogi Chaimam Bhamyam. But Krishna wants it. They don't perform the devotional service to get Krishna to take care of them. That's Krishna's pleasure. So what is the loss if we become a pure devotee? What is the loss? And what is the gain if we do something else in this world? What pleasures do we actually want? Let's measure them. What do we want? What do we value in this world? We all have our own little, well, big attachments, different things that we value. You, me. We all have so many things that we keep locked up inside that it's so hard for us to let go. But what is the value of that thing compared? And Bilamanga Thakur writes in Krishna Karnamrita,
Prabhupada explained that he lived for 500 years in Vrindavan. And he writes, the Mukti lady is standing there at my door with folded hands saying, what can I do for you? And he says, what is the value? What do I want to beg from you when every day Krishna is coming himself to supply me with? What is the value of even liberation? What do we want? This is actually what we want, not to come to Krishna, but to please Krishna. That will please us. Just like when we dress ourselves very carefully in the mirror, as we dress ourselves, the mirror image looks more and more beautiful. So similarly, when we please Krishna, or actually when the mirror image looks more beautiful, naturally we are more beautiful. So if we please Krishna, we become more and more beautiful. Okay, so hopefully we'll finish this tomorrow. Hopefully we won't finish it tomorrow, we'll just keep talking about it. So this is Krishna's explaining how he's dealing with his devotees here. How he's simply conquered by their bhakti. He doesn't want anything from anyone. He does bhakti for our good. He is self-satisfied, but for our good. And tomorrow, there's some very special lecture that I'll read.
The very beginning is said that the text 9:26 is the end of Bhagavad Gita. Did I got it wrong? Maybe.
We can also say it's the end of Bhagavad Gita. Obviously not the last verse in Bhagavad Gita, but it brings us to the point of bhakti. This is bhakti. The end is give Krishna leave of food of flow. What about with devotion? One leaf will satisfy him if it's offered with devotion, or a whole mountain of leaves won't satisfy him if there's no devotion. It's like when Krishna was, there's one town, who went to have around Govardhan called Anayur. Anayur means give me more, because when Krishna was being fed all the food during the Govardhan, it was Krishna being fed so much food, it was not satisfying him. So he kept saying, Anayur, give me more. But then when one tulsi leaf was given, he was satisfied.
The verse, I was wondering, is that like if you're giving up the results, but you're still attached subtly, is that nishkama?
If you're attached to the more subtle forms of results, the prestige, etc. So we could say it is, but it's not mature yet. If we want to push you to go higher, we'll say no, it isn't. If we want to encourage you to keep on doing it so you will go higher, we'll say yes, it is. So which would you prefer? When you don't want any result, actually, you're just doing it because it's your duty, then it's nishkama.
Sometimes he ignores his devotees.
But that's his special care, because he wants to see how they will react. When they say, oh, you're ignoring me, then
I will ignore you,
I'm leaving. Then Krishna said, oh, now I understand what kind of devotee you are. But his ignoring is like the parents ignoring of the child. It's not really ignoring, he's keeping a watchful eye to see how the child is doing. A loving and affectionate eye is watching.
as you mentioned, Super Soul is different from Krishna.
What is Super Soul?
Yeah, what is Super Soul?
Super Soul is a part of 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 Krishna. And expand, Krishna's expansion is Lord Balaram. From Lord Balaram comes Shankarshan. From Shankarshan, Chaturvyuha, for Aniruddha, Chaturvyuha, and Vasudeva. And then further expansion. From that Shankarshan comes Karanadaksha Vishnu. And then from that Karanadaksha Vishnu comes Garbhadaksha Vishnu. And from that Garbhadaksha Vishnu comes Kiradaksha Vishnu. And that Kiradaksha Vishnu is the Super Soul. So there's no difference in one sense. They're all equally powerful. But yet there is a difference. Krishna has special qualities that no one else has. Even the Narayan expansion. And the specific quality of the Super Soul is that out of his kindness, he travels with everyone in the heart, no matter where they are. And he's just waiting for us to turn to him. And if we turn to him with devotion, and we want Krishna, I mean, then Krishna is something from him. Full form. So there's no difference between the Super Soul and Krishna. But Krishna's business is not being in everyone's heart. Because he's the boss. So why should the boss do that kind of work? His business is to stay in Vrindavan. Us. He doesn't have to go to Kalaloka or anything. But when our hearts become like Vrindavan, then Krishna will come to us. Vrindavanam prityaja padam ekam nagas. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. And a conditioned soul never goes to Vrindavan, so they don't meet.
Is it good practice for devotees like to beg their food if they have an opportunity to serve traveling?
Or is that? It's just a practical question. In most places in the world, if you beg your food, everyone hates you. In Vrindavan, if you walk around saying Marukari, Marukari, you'll get fat, fridge, fuzzy, roti, hot subject. We're always practical servants. Shouldn't be impractical.
Could you please give a practical example of Satam Karma Yoga so I can understand how somebody is attached to the results of his work, yet he still gives some to Krishna?
So much. Didn't you ever preach in India? Make nice members? You're missing half your life is wasted. Anyway, stay for a while with the gallery out there. Pious businessmen, they'll make 100 crores and they'll give 1 lakh. I once had, when I was in Hong Kong many years ago, I must have told you the story, Mr. Vaswani, Prabhupada was coming, and this man was a jewel merchant, and Prabhupada was coming, so we asked him for a donation, so he gave 100 or maybe even 200 Hong Kong dollars, which, how much is that? $40 less. Say $40. Huh?
$20.
Yeah, it's 200 to get it. So anyway, he gave it very nicely actually. And then the 200 Hong Kong dollars. And then it ended up we needed a little more money. So I went back to him and asked him if he could give a little more money. So he said, no, he couldn't afford it. And then, within 2 weeks, some thieves went into his house, took his son, put a knife in his throat, and said, open the safe. And they took $18 million worth of jewels. So I
I didn't go back to him and say, I didn't. But I was thinking it after a minute. But I went back and commiserated with him and felt sorry for him. So that's Sakam Karma Yoga. He's giving something. But he's so attached to the fruit of his work, so attached. Even though it can be taken in 1 second, half a second. Okay.
What makes the point that the basic truth is contained in all the religions? But however, is that a clean pair? Change of, you know, just like Krishna says, I am equal to everyone, but...
If you know the basic truth of religion, you'll see it in every religion. If you don't know what the actual religion is, you won't see it. Unless you're very, very pious. You're very sincere and pious. Of course, what is the use of a religion without teaching us to serve Krishna, to serve God? That is the meaning of religion. If he's not a devotee, why is he offering food to Krishna? But sometimes we say that Nishkam Karma Yoga isn't devotion. But sometimes we say it is devotion. The reason why we say it's not devotion is because it's not pure bhakti. But the reason why we say it is devotion is that it leads to devotion. It's aspiring devotion. So when we offer food, we don't offer it directly to Krishna. We offer it by the mercy of our spiritual master. So that allows an aspiring devotee who doesn't yet have devotion to still be a devotee and have his food. All? That would be a great advancement for me. But I don't think it's true about you. Nishkam Karma Yoga means the mode of goodness also. And that's one is in the mode of goodness. From passion comes attachment. So many desires, fruit of desires. This will be explained in chapter 14. So Nishkam Karma Yoga is...
But Nishkam Karma Yoga definitely is not attached to
truth. Yeah, so that means...
But he's attached to
work. He's attached to his work.
That means he's coming to this temple and he's saying, I will do this service, I'm not going to do anything else, I will do that.
Like that.
This is like this.
Like that.
I will cook, I don't want to do anything else.
Like that.
He can be acceptable.
But see, but we can't... Of course, he is a devotee. But see, we also... What was Arjuna? What was Arjuna practicing? He's fighting. What was his fighting? Nishkam Karma Yoga? Bhakti? Sakam Karma Yoga? Karma Kanda?
Krishna asked him to fight.
Yes.
So that's bhakti.
But it's the same fighting, but because Krishna wanted him to fight, it was bhakti. But Krishna gave reasons on each of those levels in the Bhagavad Gita. It says, do thou fighting for the sake of fighting. That's Nishkam Karma. But he also says, if you fight, you will go to heaven, you will gain the heavenly kingdom, and lose, you will go to the heavenly kingdom, and if you win, you will gain... Arjuna ultimately fought because Krishna wanted him to fight, so it's bhakti. The same activity of fighting, but it's the motivation that makes it on one level or another. Then it's karma kanda practically if he wants to, but that wasn't why Arjuna fought to go to heaven. apitu yatta darshanam, svaga prabhaga narakeshu apitu yatta darshanam. But Narayana not kutasthana vibhiti, but out of so many muktanam api siddhanam, Narayana paraksave vibhiti, svaga prabhaga. So this is actually very rare that someone is such an exalted devotee. But just understand, this, what I'm telling you is so dangerous in a sense, because if we go preaching, we're not devotees, and you're just distributing books because you want to do it, and this isn't devotion, then first of all you'll be kicked out of the temple, and then I'll be kicked out of the temple after. See, we don't, this is, so one has to give the medicine according to what people's disease is. But Prabhupada so many times encouraged people to become number one book distributor, number one this, number one, set up the transcendental competitions. Do you think Prabhupada wanted the devotees to think, I'm the best of all book distributors, I'm the number one book distributor? No, he was encouraging them to serve Krishna with full enthusiasm. Do you understand what I mean? So we have to be careful how we explain this knowledge to people, but this is the actual. The best thing is to just serve for the pleasure of Krishna and Prabhupada. And if we can't do that, at least we should serve and be detached for the results, hoping with our mind focused on them to get the mercy of Prabhupada. And if we can't do that, yes, we can give up. In other words, there are different degrees. But if you tell someone who has a lower degree too much about the higher degree in such a way that it discourages them, we're not helping them. So therefore Krishna says, don't disrupt the minds of the ignorant who are attached to the fruit of their work. Rather, you should encourage them by your example to work in devotion. By your example of working in devotion, detachment and devotion, you encourage them. Yeah. So that's a little tricky. So please, that's what there's a saying, even a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Hare Krishna.